Hello and welcome. I'm Chubby Jerem Singh from the Money Mind team at CNA. Special Purpose Acquisition Companies, or SPACs, have taken the US by storm since last year. This year, the positive momentum has continued. Year to date, the number of SPAC IPOs in the US has already exceeded last year's record of 248 IPOs. So why are investors putting their money into SPACs? And what are the 5 things you need to know if you're thinking of putting your money into them? Joining me now is Martin Hennecke, Asia Investment Director, St. James Place Wealth Management, and Elvin Chow, CEO of financial education company Dr. Wealth. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Many thanks for having me.
Yeah, happy to share, and all thanks for having me as well.
Martin, let's start with you. What is a SPAC? Help our listeners to demystify SPACs.
It's a blank check companies whereby a sponsor is raising money through an IPO on the stock exchange from investors without having identified a target yet. And usually there's a 2-year time frame for that money to be applied to a specific target. We have seen more and more IPOs in this space becoming very popular, and that's technology generally, healthcare, biotech, and then new energy, especially more recently coming up. In the process, you know, investors have generally become somewhat less careful as well about due diligence and valuation in this area, in my personal opinion, which has actually seen some exchanges getting a bit more cautious. For example, the Shanghai Star Market has looked into introducing measures for IPOs that are more restrictive than previously to ensure quality. SPACs, however, have been going somewhat in the other way and have been particularly strong in the US. And so far, they actually made it easier and faster for some companies in those areas to go to a listing. And I suspect in part is also fueled by the rush to cash in on attractive valuation that can be gained here before there might be a slowdown or potentially a significant correction in here. And in a nutshell, I would be very, very careful for those 2 reasons. One is that valuations, you know, and due diligence generally should be looked at very carefully and might not always have been. Secondly, there's also quite a significant conflict of interest and other concerns inherent in the typical SPAC structure as well that retail investors may not always be fully aware of.
All right. We will revisit the risks of investing in SPACs a little later in the show. For now, Elvin, can anyone raise a SPAC? Would you raise a SPAC?
I don't think anyone can raise a SPAC. You typically need a particular size to be enough to go for a listing. You must be attractive to investors. Otherwise, if you go public and nobody wants to buy into this SPAC, then you won't raise that kind of money that you wanted to. So I don't think anyone can. And the trend so far, it has always been the more disruptive or emerging technologies. That's where a lot more of these companies need funding. And this SPAC is just one of the many ways or the avenues that they can raise money through. I think it's usually money-losing companies where they need funds, and yet they are very promising, they have high potential, a sexy story to sell.
Martin, what about you? Would you encourage companies to consider listing through a SPAC?
Now, they might be able to get a more attractive price potentially and might be able to go to a listing a little bit faster than what can be achieved with the IPO. In it. Longer term, though, I think, and increasingly with the public becoming aware of some of the conflicts of interests inherent to the typical current structures, I think there's also going to be an increasing reputational risk and also an increasing risk of some deals later on facing troubles and potentially falling through or having prices needing to be renegotiated.
While SPACs have been hot in the US, they haven't picked up much momentum in Asia so far. Currently in the region, only Malaysia and South Korea have listing rules for SPACs. Singapore could soon see its first SPAC listing as early as June, if the proposed regulatory framework for SPAC listings go through. Hong Kong is also set to come up with its regulatory framework for SPACs by June. Do SPACs have potential in Asia, and are there enough quality targets and sponsors in the region? Elvin?
I guess as you rightly pointed out, that's one of the concerns that investors have, right? Does the Asian market have that depth to produce those kind of world-class technological companies that can do well in all these SPACs merger? I would say that it is a question mark because even the locally born Grab decided to join a US SPAC listing rather than waiting for an Asia one. I think that the more successful ones will still choose to merge with a US SPAC, given that probably the level of funding they can get is a lot higher and they get more international recognition as well. Whereas in Asia, it's probably more fragmented and Singapore tend to have a smaller base of investors. If you do a listing here, maybe for mid-level technology companies that are not so big of a size like Grab level, they can have a market over here. I don't think the big blockbuster tech listing will happen with the SPACs in Asia region.
Martin, do you agree with Alvin that we won't see blockbuster SPACs listings in Asia anytime soon?
I would actually suspect in 6-12 months down the road, we might not see any blockbuster SPACs anywhere in the world anymore because the investing public becomes increasingly aware of those challenges in the structures. But let me say one thing, though. I have read the proposals as far as that, you know, those information has been published of how Singapore actually is looking at a set of quite different rules from the typical SPAC structure in the United States. And I'm really, really pleased to see that a lot of the worst excesses and conflicts of interest are actually being addressed in those revised SPAC rules by Singapore. Then, of course, the next question will be, given those changes, are SPACs actually going to take off? Because some people might raise the question of, is that too restrictive? In my view, it should be as restrictive as it is to ensure investor protection. In my view, ultimately, Singapore and Hong Kong as well have a reputation to lose. Doing things ethically is the best way to go for reputation and for attracting funds in different ways in the long term. Now, I will be very interested to see, though, if we should witness a significant spark interest in either Hong Kong or Singapore with those better measures being taken. If we do, that's great. If we don't, what it might be showing is really that part of the whole SPAC boom was fueled by the fact that it was relatively easy money for some parties and some other parties being taken advantage of to some extent, shouldering the burden.
So a quick recap, a SPAC is a shell company set up to raise money through an IPO to eventually acquire another company. SPACs are usually formed by groups of sponsors and often target disruptive or emerging technologies. SPACs have been a hot trend on Wall Street, and it looks like they're heading to Asia as well. Alvin, you mentioned Grab earlier. It's one of Southeast Asia's biggest unicorn, and it's set to list on the Nasdaq. Why do you think Grab is listing via a SPAC instead of a traditional IPO?
Using a SPAC is a lot faster than going through a traditional route of IPO, where you need a lot more due diligence, going through with the investment banker on the deal. That may take maybe a year, right? But whereas if you do a merger with a SPAC within a few months, you'll be able to do that. During a SPAC merger, it's not just the SPAC that will provide the funding. They'll also be relying on the PIPE investor, the private investment in public entities, short form is PIPE. The PIPE actually puts in a lot more billions than the SPAC itself. So in that process, it allows the company to get a lot more funding from all these cornerstone investors a lot faster than with an IPO route. So I do think that it is one of the more attractive ways for a lot of all these unicorns to seek merger with SPACs. And I guess this is why it gained a lot more popularity. I suspect if Grab is to go on with a traditional IPO route, right, I don't think they will be listing anytime soon. It might be many, many years down the road.
Maybe you could just talk a bit more on risks. And we know that SPACs are growing in popularity, especially in the US, and now the SEC is also looking into incentives and compensation paid to the SPAC sponsor. For investors, what sort of safeguards are there and what should investors know before investing?
I think it's a cowboy market right now in the SPAC space, right? Because it's pretty new, it's pretty exciting. They are dealing with that kind of technology stocks, which have done well in 2020, especially post-COVID-19. Tech stocks really rallied, and that carried on to the SPAC space, right? SPACs actually has been around since 30 years ago. It just didn't gain popularity until 2020. You can have 5% gain, 10% gain in a day in 2020, and that was very normal. And people just went on this craze and just keep buying all these SPACs. So I think there is definitely some bubbles that's going on. But at the same time, I do think that this SPAC vehicle is going to be staying here for a long time. But of course, I think the danger and the risk part is you never know what degree of that bubble is right now. Although during February, we see the correction in SPACs as well as the tech companies. It has brought a lot of SPACs down to earth. The appetite is not as strong as before. As we can see, even for the Grab case, Usually during a merger announcement, the share price will jump up a lot more. It can be like 20-30%, much higher than the closing price of the previous day. But the Grab merger, once it was announced, the SPAC price actually went down 7% instead of going up. So it seems like the investor appetite is a little bit more wary about SPACs at this moment, right? Although it eventually managed to close 10% higher. But I would suspect if this Grab merger happened in 2020, easily it could have gone up 20-30% on a merger announcement. There are many specs out there. The risk is that you never know what the merger is going to be as it is a blank check company, right? So it's almost like playing a little bit of that lucky draw. You may get a good company, you may not get a good company. And it seems a lot more speculative now. So I think that's where the risks are.
Martin, I know you talked about it earlier, but what is your advice for investors who want to invest in specs? What are some of the risks?
Specs have, like the vast majority of them nowadays do, this vast area of conflict of interest, I would simply be staying clear of them currently without the new protection measures that the Asian exchanges are looking into. The risks are simply too high. I give an example. Right now, the sponsors I mentioned who are receiving typically a 20% promote. The issue is that if within the 2-year time frame, there's no targets being acquired and no merger is happening, well, the SPAC has got to dissolve and the sponsors will be left paying a lot of the expenses that have been occurring during this time, which are millions of dollars. And so sponsors actually have got quite a high incentive to get a deal closed. And with the very, very large numbers of deals right now being open after this unprecedented boom, I think it's very, very likely that a lot of corners will have to be cut, and those sponsors being willing to accept prices in order to, for themselves, simply to get a deal done and not having to shoulder those costs without any benefit, even if it may not be the best value deal for the money that's being allocated. I would distinguish clearly, though, between the two very distinct Jubilee group of investors. The first group being the IPO investors who might not intend to hold post-merger. The second group is those secondary market and who intend to hold post-merger. By far the larger risks are in the second group because of that dilutive and fee amplification effect. Now, the first group has actually been doing fairly well because the money is being held in trust. For them, with the interest being paid, they are also getting warrants, etc. And there has basically been little to no risk for those, assuming that they exit before the merger is happening. However, I think increasingly now, as we see demand for SPACs weakening and the boom sort of is grinding to a halt more and more, I think we might actually also see some risks increasing for that first group, because some of the SPACs will have provisions to say that if investors team up to vote against the deal, there might be some consequences for them. There might also be cases where sponsors will ask for extensions of it and other factors. And personally, I also think, you know, one should sort of question the ethics of, you know, investing it and being in the first group, knowing that the second group is shouldering a lot of costs.
All right, I think I know the answer to this question. Martin's probably going to say no. So Elvin, would you invest in a SPAC?
Personally, actually, I've invested in specs. I lump it under the speculative place. It's never my core holdings. I subscribe to a barbell approach where majority of your capital is invested in long-term, relatively safer kind of investment. And you know, it's very hard sometimes not to speculate. How I deal with it is that I will allocate a very small part, let's say just 10% of that entire capital allocated to this more speculative play. And spec is under this basket of speculative plays. So I do invest in them. If I may put in a good word for specs, we are living in a world where there's a lot more disruptive technologies that's coming up. And from that point of view, a lot of the early stage investments are not available for retail investors. Talking about all the early phases in like your Facebook, Amazon, all those, it's totally impossible for retail investors to access. Specs have increased that chances of a retail investor participating in some of this emerging technology a lot earlier compared to if you wait until a lot of all these tech companies become very big and go for IPO. that will be probably many, many years later. So I do think that for some of these technology companies where investors really like the company, like the services, like the products, they may be even users of it. It becomes really an opportunity for them to bet on that kind of future that they want to shape into. So I do think that that is one value that specs bring to it. Of course, it brings a lot of other disadvantages as well. It's not just the VCs, it's not just the angel investors. Yes, I get in later than them, but at least specs have brought in a lot more of these companies earlier than they would have if they had gone for IPOs.
Cool, sweet. So you can get in on the action as well. Alvin and Martin, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the 5 Things You Need to Know podcast from CNA's Money Mind team. Thanks for your company.